The doors beckoned, tall and oaken, and lashed with strips of black iron. The goblins, perched on his shoulders, felt heavier.
Gus took another deep breath, felt his lungs stretch, and clasped the bat for security.
Then he got moving, straight toward the minivan. His attention roved, trying to see everywhere at once. The vehicle's doors were unlocked, so he opened the one behind the driver's side. Nothing. Cleaner than a baby's fresh-wiped ass. Say what he might about Talbert, the prick kept his machine tidy. A quick inspection showed the keys were missing, but that wasn't a big deal. Nothing was in the rear either, which meant the four of them had gone in with whatever they'd brought along and did not come back out. He straightened and stepped back enough to study the mansion's front doors between the columns. The house towered over him, pondering whether he had the fortitude to venture inside. Gus wondered that himself. The mirrored gleam of the unshuttered windows on the third level made him paranoid. "Fuck it," he snarled and marched right up to the entrance. The main doors were great slabs of wood that might have been pulled off a German castle and shipped overseas. Nothing seemed wrecked or even damaged. The place reeked of unchecked decadence, money spent on luxuries simply because one had money. It wouldn't surprise Gus if the shitter was made of gold and the toilet paper of silk, maybe even a diamond dispenser. Silk toilet paper. That had possibilities. A doorbell in the guise of a leather cord with a tail of tassels hung from the upper frame. Gus ignored the temptation to pull it, imagining cathedral-sized chimes ringing out deep within the mansion. He tugged on the wrought iron handle on the left. It cracked open. Gus supposed he shouldn't be surprised at how easily that went. Talbert and his boys had probably come the very same way. Then the house exhaled in his face. The breath of a violated tomb assaulted him. A putrid wave of decomposition Gus hadn't smelled in a long time, certainly not on the open farm. The stink flooded his nose and mouth and befouled both, his hands arriving late to cover his face. His shoulders bunched reflexively, and he squinted into the gap, enduring the rotten air. An elegant inner room with a midnight marbled floor ended in a closed set of lacquered cherrywood doors that simply shone in the meager daylight. A waist-high series of Japanese-style lockers both collected outer footwear and offered slippers. Empty ceramic vases rested on the top in a tasteful decor. A wall-mounted computer screen and ultra-thin terminal jutted from the wall on his right. He stepped inside and gravitated toward the machine, tapped its keyboard. Unresponsive. Behind him, the door creaked. Gus turned around and took two steps before jamming the bat into the shrinking gap, halting the door's closure. The air smelled a little better now, but a bad vibe remained. The outer door had to stay open. He didn't understand why. It wasn't locked. But a sense of sinister grandeur permeated this first room, a portent of things deeper within. Gray daylight, a saber of sanity, beamed at him. "Don't," one of those shit-bagged goblins whispered sweetly in his ear. "I'm telling you, don't." "You're being fucking silly," Gus scolded himself. "The door isn't locked. You're just ring rusty is all." Frowning, he let the door swing closed without a squeal of hinges, entombing him. Fear of being trapped gripped his senses, and he lurched forward, found the handle, and yanked. The door opened with a comforting, "Yes, need something?" Holding it, Gus leaned out of the mansion and checked on the SUV and minivan. The coast was still clear. All was simply ducky outside. Feeling better with daylight at his back, he grabbed a pair of soft-soled slippers from a locker and packed one underneath the first door, keeping it wide open. Van Helsing wouldn't go into a vampire's lair at night, and having an open avenue of retreat made Gus feel better. He regarded the inner door, amazed at its inlays of threaded gold. The cost and craftsmanship made him shake his head. Taking one of the inner door's handles, Gus pulled, It wouldn't move. He pushed. Another mournful gasp of bad gas made him cringe and hold his breath. His shadow stretched over a grand foyer of more polished marble floors. Glittering chandeliers floated overhead like immense jellyfish made of crystal. Dark pillars of bare wood rose up on either side of the entrance, leading into archways and side corridors, black and silence-filled. The main foyer ran deeper inside the house, but the light petered out into a nebulous curtain of night, which couldn't be right. Even in daytime, some light always squeaked through somewhere. But the path ahead was blackness incarnate, impenetrable. Gus kept the door open with his shoulder and wished for a flashlight, swearing at himself for not bringing one along. The feeling of being out of practice rushed over him once again. But the house remained still, silent. Back in the day, he'd rap on the wall or even shout to announce his presence to the dead, drawing any lurkers into the light where he could conveniently dispatch them. In this tomb, he hesitated even to clear his throat. The darkness at the edge of the daylight exuded venom. The main foyer appeared 30 feet across at least, and Gus had no idea how far into the mansion it went, or how many gimps might be hidden just out of sight. Possibly an army. The place was big enough to hold one. Gus gazed upon the crystals sagging motionlessly above, and couldn't see a ceiling. His fist tightened on the remaining slipper. "Game on," Gus whispered and exhaled. "Hey," he shouted, his own voice startling him. "Talbert, you fucking in there somewhere? Bark if you're able." He rapped the bat against the door. "Hear me, shit for brains? Huh? Don't make me come in there. Don't." His voice left him. Along the right wall, just at the edge of daylight, lay a boot sole. Gus almost missed its dirt-caked grooves. Toes down, which meant it was still on the lower leg of the owner. "Fuck around," he finished, as if waking from a deep sleep. Then he heard it. Somewhere deep in the mysteries of the house was the barest tinkle of something glass-like being nudged. It distracted him. Footsteps. Two stealthy barefoot slaps rushed behind him. Gus had half-turned when a pair of hands shoved him inside the foyer. Gus yelled and fell, helmed forehead cracking off the marble, kicking and flipping himself over to find whoever the hell had pushed him into the deep end. A figure stood at the second set of doors, arm raised as if touching something farther up on the frame. The inner doors closed with all the finality of a death trap being sprung. "Hey!" Gus yelled, scrambled to his knees, heart pounding, propelling himself at the portal just as it clicked shut. His gloved hands and bat crashed against the hardwood surface before fumbling in the sudden dark. "Hey!" He yanked on the door, relieved for a split second that they opened from the inside, to reveal only a sepulchral blackness. Chapter 5. Gus felt for a handle on this new barrier, finding nothing. "Oh, shit," he panted over and over like a breathless mantra. "Oh, shit, oh, shit." Something heavy hit him from behind. Gus mangled a scream and twisted around, confused at the lack of space, before realizing his attacker was the hardwood door which he had previously yanked open, closing on him. Taking a breath and glaring, he stomped a heel into the door's base, keeping it away from him while he turned his back and felt this new wall preventing him from leaving the mansion. The notion that some nimble cocksucker had snuck up and pushed him inside motivated him to find a quick escape. He'd seen enough old Technicolor by Deluxe movies in his day to know a human sacrifice when he saw one. Anger fueled him. He clawed at the barrier's surface. He slammed his bat against it, and realized it wasn't wood at all, but metal. Steel, perhaps, like a protective seal to prevent harmful fallout from seeping inside. Or keeping scavengers from leaving. Gus found no purchase in the precise seams of the barrier's edges. This new wall had dropped or slid across without a sound, sealing him in. He couldn't remember hearing anything, not even a metallic whine of gears, except that quick padding of bare feet before the push. The force of the shove would have left him choking on his dentures if he had any. Gus searched the doorframe from one end to the other, finding nothing except the slipper he'd dropped. Sealed in. Snared. He placed his back against the new wall and let the inner door close upon him like a nutcracker, struggling to hear anything over his own frantic breathing. Nothing. Not yet. But it was coming. Gus slipped away from the doorway, allowing the inner door to close. He stared into the dark, visor up, swearing at the lack of light. Blackness. A haunted meat freezer of night that scared him almost to the point of immobility. His breathing intensified, the shock of his predicament finally hitting home. He didn't want to be there. Wanted to play it all over again as one would in a console game after dying in a totally unacceptable fashion. Then he threw his head back and cracked his helmet off the wooden door behind, the impact shocking, sobering. In the aftershock of that blow, a sound reached his ears. A soft shuffling, at times squeaking. Gus recognized it immediately. Feet, on bare marble. Many feet, hobbling along like slippered grannies without their walkers. He knew this scenario. He'd played it many times before, heavy-handed and with no apologies.
You were drunk then, his mind pointed out.
Fuck off, brain, Gus growled, staring wide-eyed into the deep darkness. He arched his head to the sides, his peripheral vision adapting and discerning flickers of inky movement lumbering toward him, the whisper of their soft-souled stampede frightening him more than his last stand at the house. An overpowering stench of decomposing flesh accosted him, as if he'd been blindfolded and had a rancid slab of ripe and wormy steak rubbed under his nose. It woke him up faster than a shot of smelling salts from a corner man. The moans and low, poisonous hisses followed, like a parking lot of cars all losing air pressure in their tires, closing in on him. All right. Gus bent over, hands tightening around his bat as the nearing ghosts became chilling traceries in the dark. You pushed me in here, he said, but I fucking guarantee you'll be kicking me out. His eyes flickered everywhere, barely seeing anything. The memory of a wide-open foyer straight into the heart of this multi-storied beast of a residence sprang into his mind like a lonely strand of life-granting rope. Stay in the open. Don't get boxed in. Take no chances. The first gimp appeared almost right in front of him, just a ripple in the dark. A spider's flutter of fingers grazed his left shoulder, hunting for a grip. A ghoulish face, skeletal below the nose, materialized, and Gus jerked back and slammed against the wall. He ducked and barreled forward. His shoulder caught a pillowy midsection and ripped a chunk from it, immediately releasing an explosive whiff of pent-up gastro delight. The gimp didn't crash to the floor, but rather sloughed, like a huge sock of skin being shed and dropped from a height. Gus charged, bent over at the hips, feeling a millipede's patter of fingers over his back. The zombies were just as blind as he, and walked with their arms straight out. These he ducked under, smashing into sides or hips, spinning the dead around on twisting ankles. He swung his bat low, connecting with a kneecap, and the attached body collapsed like a dropped suitcase. More crowded into him, but he plowed through dozens attempting to grab his Nomex hide. His helmet became a rounded bullet. The zombies caroled evilly in that pitch-black soup, but Gus stormed through, fear morphing into a spite-fueled desire to do as much damage as possible. He plowed through a defensive line, holding his bat before him like a horizontal length of pipe, connecting with bodies in devastating fashion. Nearly blind as he was, he had no means to verify any kills, but killing wasn't in his mind right then. Fucking up as many as possible was.
Adrenaline made his pistons glow with heat. A body hit his lowered bat dead on and actually split, the torso spilling over his back and the legs tripping him. Gus stumbled, landing on all fours in a clatter. Zombies clutched at his back, his shoulders, his head. One bit into a shoulder, to no avail. Gus scooted between legs, knocking several gimps off balance and feeling them fall. The space cleared, and he got to his feet, charging low once more. A zombie hit his shoulder and twirled away. A wall of flesh crashed into him dead on, a fragrant mashup of septic foulness and rotten tissue. Gus shoved it aside with some effort. He picked up lost speed. A ghoulish glimpse of naked deadhead loomed, its hips moving like a rusty ice auger, while the head seemed to churn in the opposite direction. Gus stopped and swung, removing its skull in a burst of bone and filth. He stumbled on, past silhouettes closing in from the edges, a veritable mass of dead things converging on the main foyer, zeroing in on the one piece of still breathing, still running, chunk of meat. Then there were no zombies about him, and he thought about finding a corridor and maybe getting above the ravenous crowd, when both of his knees clattered into something stone-like and unyielding, and he flipped over in the dark, ass over tits, and landed hard on his back. The impact knocked the wind from his lungs. Struggling to make sense of it all, Gus floundered weakly. He heard a train coming, distant but heavy on the rails, making the very earth thrum. His fingers flexed and worked, but his knees felt hyperextended within a hairline of breaking. They moved, but were none too happy about it, and made it known. The goblins hitched on his shoulders shrieked in evil delight, their howls resonating from ear to ear. Gus turned his head, seeing nothing but a vat of tar. Then a face slunk out of it, less than a foot from his eyes. A grandfatherly gimp, with a gauze of clingy hair spattered to his forehead. A single off-kilter eyeball stared through those greasy curls, its lips eroded into a wicked gleam of golden teeth. As Gus's mind attempted to contact his unresponsive limbs, that evil face inchwormed forward until its chin slid over his shoulder. The face shuddered as if the corpse had been gut-shot. Then it bunched up, like a worm about to gnaw its way into an apple. Those yellow teeth sank into the Nomex, not 5 fingers away from Gus's face, with all the patience of a doctor attempting to inject a patient. The thing's jawline flexed. Its single bulbous eye, white and unseeing but ogling the ceiling, showed no change in emotion as its teeth slowly shifted at its disintegrating gum line. Spear-like roots of enamel leaned forward, puncturing their black moorings of flesh like the heads of maggots, while a dreadful wail rose in Gus's ears, reminding him of approaching trains. He realized it was him screaming. Violently. His legs came online, and he jerked away from that head, yanking out several golden teeth entirely. Gus kicked out with heavy boots, pulping the melon-sized bauble of skull and skin against something solid. A wall. The thigh-high wall of a fountain. And he stood inside its dry cavity. Shoulders and chest heaving, Gus climbed to his feet in time to make out a terrifying mob of hands and faces reaching for him. He lurched away from the stony rim of the fountain, bumping into a shadowy figure perched on a bone-dry dais. Zombies pressed against the fountain's low barrier and spilled over like drunken birds attempting a sip. The front of the hunting party stalled. Getting his bearings and feeling the curve of the fountain, Gus slid around as fingers grazed his outer arm, shoulder, and the side of his helmet. A hand pawed at his face, swiping his visor down and blinding him completely. Gus screamed, and the interior of the mansion erupted in an explosion of light. As luck would have it, the frightful cadaver had lowered Gus's visor at the best time. The burst of light from multiple suns overhead illuminated the entire floor, which would have surely fried Gus's dilated eyes and rendered him near helpless, flailing at a mass of dead creatures. The tinted screen of his helmet shielded his vision, though he still shied away from the brightest overhead fixtures. For seconds, he pressed against the fountain's figurehead with his head lowered before chancing a peek. He gasped. an army of undead flooded the main foyer. They converged on his position, their stained, filthy heads in stark contrast to stylish pop art images and elaborate landscape oil paintings affixed high on the walls. Gus spotted a wide hall at the rear and scissored his legs over the fountain wall. Gimps crowded him as his boots hit the floor. Lowering his head, he barged through 5 feet of soft, rancid flesh until the sheer volume of the dead forced him to his knees. There he took the low road and crawled between legs to freedom. His shoulders plowed through knees, and they fell against each other, even on top of him. Feeling the growing weight on his back, Gus pressed himself to his feet, shrugging off hands clawing his back. He shoved and pushed back grinning heads, nearly spent from his exertions, and yet distantly marveling over the extravagance of the mansion's interior, all fully revealed under searing spotlights that robbed the walls of color. Gus screamed back at the moaning faces and pressed forward.
Then he was free and stumbled into a run.
Archways and closed doors of mahogany flashed by at a delirious rush. More figures shambled into the light, hissing, moaning, moving, and clawing.
The hall split at a junction, marked by a displaced brick wall that bent Gus's senses and stopped him in his tracks.
The center of the wall crumbled inward, trailing bricks and sandy ribbons, revealing a huge hole into deep space. Bright stars surrounded an orbiting starship, while the glowing face of the sun hung far and away in the background. Only when Gus placed a hand against the mural did the illusion break. Deadheads crept in from his flanks. A uniformed woman with half her head shorn away reached for him with one arm. The other had been ripped entirely from its shoulder. Gus took a batter's stance and smashed the remaining chunk of her ruined skull. He spun and balked at a leather-covered fright. Glossy black clothed the gimp in snug fashion, its shoulders a needlework of spikes. An eyeless mask, revealing a torn zipper for a mouth, shambled forward, stunning Gus with morbid fascination. When the thing reached for him, he swung and squashed the leatherhead's brain pan to one side, gray matter squirting out from improper stitches. Gus ran down a corridor, sidestepping zombies when he could, feeling the weight of his arms.
A chef's kitchen nearly blazing with light flashed by, then an archway to a library complete with sliding ladders.
In a sunken movie theater, about a dozen decomposing torsos turned his way as he ran past. In an office filled with designer furniture and overturned desks, the undead staff pointed at him. A wide stairway beckoned, and he raced to the second floor, feeling a savage burn in his calves and hamstrings, forcing them to work. He got halfway up the stairs before crashing into a solid wall. He stepped back, blinking at the wondrous illusion of an ascending staircase before the pursuing mob urged him to back up and stagger off in a different direction. An oak door caught his attention. He raced through it, stomping inside yet another library. He whirled and closed the door with effort. Gus saw no lock, so he dropped his bat and pushed a luxurious sofa against the wood, straining hard enough to believe something arterial was about to burst. He shoved the piece of furniture tight against the door, just as something heavy slammed against it. Nearly exhausted, Gus sucked in air as he slid his visor up. The light was softer in the reading room. He backed away from the door, relieved to see it holding. Hands hammered the wood from beyond, but the door barely budged. Nothing but the best for Mortimer. Gus retreated and plopped down on another posh sofa. He looked around the place in breathless wonder. The library was smaller, cozier, filled with bookshelves and comfortable furniture. A monstrous stone fireplace befitting a ski lodge in the French Alps dominated one wall. Every tall window in the room had been smashed and replaced with metallic shutters. Arcs of glass glittered on the carpet. Gus sagged into the sofa. With the sudden burst of running, crawling, and bat swinging, he felt he'd just completed a goddamn triathlon in less than a minute. His heart felt ready to explode. Sweat coated him in a fine sheen. He sucked down great lungfuls of air as more hands slapped the oaken door. Gus kept his eye on it, but for the moment he felt secure. The mansion, however, was a nest. A nest, he wheezed. Jesus Christ. A fucking grade-A hive packed with lips and assholes.
His breathing smoothed out and he became aware of his sweat-saturated clothing underneath the Nomex. Needing to feel fresh air on his face, he pulled off the helmet and dropped it onto a cushion. The flailing of hands and limbs on the thick door outside didn't bother him. The urge to find the bastard who'd pushed him inside this pit sprang up in Gus's chest and head. He also wanted to know where the controls for the overhead lights were located. And what was the purpose of those exquisite 3D renderings that challenged the mind and fooled the senses right up until impact? Right then, he felt as if he were inside an enormous mousetrap. And he sure as hell could use a sip from a silver flask of goodness. No sooner did he think it than the lights winked out, as if for punishment for even considering it. But the drumming of fleshy limbs against the door continued. Hidden in the dark, Gus lay on the sofa, boots high, recuperating while sifting through his thoughts. People were in the house. Maybe not the original owners, but someone. How many was unknown, but at least one had access to the outside. The house had a power source. It surprised him to a degree, but he didn't freak out over it. Mortimer possessed more than enough acreage to put up a row or two of wind turbines, or even a few reefs of solar panels, perhaps even something more advanced like the floor generators of New York, which harnessed the energy in every foot-on sidewalk impact and converted it into a whopping 15% of the city's power needs. Mortimer also liked flicking the lights on and off in his house, which summoned an image of an old guy hunched over a grand desk, cackling while playing Evil Overlord with a switch. Gus sat and stewed on the mysteries of the mansion while the thumping against the door lessened. When he was ready, he stood and felt his way around the nearly pitch-black room. Secret passages popped into his head, wiring him awake and granting him a break from his growing thirst. He hadn't brought anything with him on the trip, not one crumb or drop. It was only supposed to be a day trip, a quick in and out. Listening to a ravenous pack just beyond 3 inches of wood informed him as to how short-sighted he'd been. Zombies. A slew of them. Walking and chewing. Perhaps the smooth floors kept them upright longer than if they'd been outside dragging their feet on asphalt. The army cornering him here was the largest single group of deadheads he'd encountered since torching half of Annapolis. He wished he had his hands on his old Benelli shotgun. The thunder duster would punch holes through the entire gang at the doors. As it was, all he had was the bat and a knife. Gus felt his way to the fireplace and stuck his head in, seeing what he could see up and beyond. Through a plate-sized opening far above, clouds darkened. The day was getting older. Gus returned to the sofa. With a bouncy plop, he settled in. He had a feeling he was in for a long wait, remembering his times stuffed away in attics. Time crawled by, punctuated by the irregular pounding of fists upon wood. Heat seeped into the room, low but there, and he wondered if old Morty had invested in a floor heating system. Probably had. Nothing seemed too good for the man. The sofa worked its magic, taking some of the edge off and allowing his body to recharge. Slowly, against his will, sleep took him. Chapter 6. A scream woke him, yanking him into a sitting position. Gus fumbled with his bat, his attention locked on the library's door. The room seemed darker than before, and his internal clock sensed the sun had set recently. Getting off the sofa, he whipped the bat in searching arcs, just in case something might have crept inside without him knowing. All clear. He found the door, still holding, and listened. Another piercing note, deep in the marble guts of the mansion, long and lingering, as if someone were being tortured at leisure. That made Gus screw up his face. What the hell passed for leisure in this place? His mind fluttered for a moment, realizing his unloving pursuers were no longer pounding on the door, and a thread of light outlined the doorframe.
The lights were back on outside. Gus hauled the end of the sofa back, gathered his helmet, and pulled it on. His hand located the door handle, and he took a breath before pulling it open a crack. Well, holy shit. Blue light from the ceiling cast an icebox hue across the hall and floor. Gus realized the interior of the house had cooled considerably. Gimps stood in the hall, directionless, waiting for another scream, and no longer interested in the morsel trapped inside the reading room. They didn't wait long. Another skin-tightening wail hooked the attention of the zombies and lured them away. Not interested in following, Gus crept away from the undead flow, along a corridor three times the width of a regular one. The ceiling lights glowed overhead, spaced out along the corridor like a segmented spine. Collapsed tables lined the baseboards. Decorative art pieces lay on broken legs. White dust from shattered vases and small statuettes coated the floor. Over time, the dead had shattered the various pieces of furniture and kicked everything against the wall. Gus slunk past two separate washrooms, their heated thrones intact, and he fought down the impulse to check for toilet paper. The scream rang out again, farther away now, marking almost a minute. Gus stopped and put his back against a wall. A minute? Was someone prodding a person on a clock? A handful of zombies came around the corner, five cast-offs from an S&M party dressed in their finest leather and zipper masks. In the blue hue of the lights, they shambled toward him at best speed. Gus gawked at them, seeing for the first time how the floor in their path wasn't a floor at all, but a huge pit, the width of the corridor, not 20 feet from where he stood. Gus didn't move. His helmet hid his smirk. That's right, you freaks. Come to Papa. The first deadhead, dressed in a slick getup that spoke of wild sex parties, walked over the pit. The illusion of the floor art threw Gus for a moment before he retreated from the advancing pack as they waltzed across, sneering as if they'd known all along. When they got into range, he dispatched the five with relative ease, bashing open their brain pans and scattering them across the floor. He walked to the center of the floor art, impressed with the detail, disbelieving that such a level of trickery could be achieved. A short note of pain echoed again through the corridor, almost a grunt that time, urging him to hurry. Gus didn't want to hurry, scared of what he might discover. He moved to the end of the corridor, which branched right and left. Alternatively, he could check out what was behind a door just ahead. Gus looked for undead and, seeing the coast clear, went to the door and tried the knob. A rewarding click followed. A sudden, frightening hiss split the air, and something punched Gus hard in the center of his back, squashing him against the wood. The force stunned and startled him. He fell and rolled over just as a second hiss bounced his helmeted head off the marble. Gus groaned and pushed himself into a sitting position, looking around as he did so. Jesus Christ! Walking toward the floor pit, and dressed like a predator from the apocalypse, was an archer. The archer wore a Korean mask depicting an old man grinning hugely, his right eye looking down an arrow knocked to an archaic but still effective bow. Snow-white fatigues, camouflage for winter hunting, took on a blue tone under the lights. Gus's face contorted in horrified wonder. Just as the archer released, the missile hissed through the corridor like a black bolt of lightning and nailed Gus's sternum, bucking him against the wall. A perfect shot any other time, ruined by the heavy folds of his Nomex gear. It wasn't bulletproof. Hell, as far as Gus knew, it couldn't stop a hunting arrow either. But it had. Cold. However, Gus's sternum felt as if it had just been stomped on by a sumo. He winced, holding a hand to his chest. It wouldn't surprise him if the impact had fractured bone. The Korean mask peeked up from the bow, enormous grin blazing in the blue light. He smoothly extracted another arrow, notched the bow, and drew back until his fingers touched a wooden cheek. Gus lurched into motion, feet finding traction and propelling him forward just as a shrieking arrow twanged off his left thigh, dropping him to a knee with a yelp. The meat of his leg felt as if it had just been tenderized by a sledgehammer.
"You fucker!"
The archer stoically walked forward, knocking a new arrow. Gus could see the white plumage of several more missiles over the man's shoulder, deadly to any other guest, but thank the Lord above for quality-made fire gear. Gus stumbled out of the way just as another arrow split the air and embedded itself with a whook into the doorframe, splintering it and missing Gus's ass cheek by a few fingers. Shaking off the effects of the arrows, Gus hobbled at best possible speed down the trashed hallway, weaving from side to side to present the hardest target possible.
Sst!
An arrow slugged him in his left shoulder, twisting him off his feet and sending him crashing through a doorless entry. The clatter of the missile falling to the floor echoed through the hall, and Gus caught that mournful scream again as he stumbled toward a sofa set. He flipped over it, bouncing off soft cushions and onto a plush rug. Metallic shutters blanketed and protected a glass wall spanning the width of the room. Light reflected in its surface. Judging by the rugs, sofas, and the pair of massive white brick fireplaces adorning the north and south walls, Gus figured he was in a living room as he slammed himself against the edge of the opening.
"Who are you, huh?"
he yelled, bringing up his right hand, frankly amazed he still had a hold of his bat. No reply. He glanced up, seeing the handrails and a walkway of the second floor jutting out 12 feet above him and leading back into the area above the hall he'd just come from. Hope flared, but how could he get up there? With the overhang, there was no way he could climb over the fireplaces. Grunting in discomfort and still feeling the numbing effects of being struck by arrows, Gus lumbered back to the entrance and discovered the door actually slid across on rollers. Grabbing the handles, he pushed with everything he had, intending to seal the living room off like a bright vault. The Korean mask filled the closing crack, appearing in the last second just as it shut with a clap of wood. Gus straightened with a grunt. There was a simple eyehook on the frame, and he flipped it into place, locking the door just as the man on the other side attempted to open it. Gus smirked in false sympathy at the attempt. He turned around, taking in the far wall of the glass, and one feature grabbed his attention. A set of double doors marked each end of the glass, leading nowhere, as the metal shutters beyond forbade any escape outside. Gus chugged toward a pair, anxious and not believing for a second he'd escaped the snow camo archer. Crossing the living room floor, he saw the doors opened inside and immediately craned his neck up to the overhang and walkway above. He opened both doors and threw the closest one wide open as far as possible and stopped it below the edge of the overhang. Gus eyed the doorknob. A foothold if he ever saw one. He sheathed his bat and staggered toward a heavy-looking sofa chair. A second later, he manhandled the furniture piece into position against the door. He climbed onto the chair, got one boot on the nearby doorknob, and swung his other boot to the knob on the other side, straddling it like a pogo stick. It worked, for all of a split second before Gus fell back, unable to keep his hands gripped to the doorframe. He eyed the glass for a moment before punching the pane, shattering the glass with a combat-gloved fist. Then he stepped back onto the knobs and looped an arm through the wrecked frame of the door. Gus reached up, and his fingertips touched the closest wooden post. Close, but no cigar. Never easy. He bent his knees, prepping himself for... He jumped 4 inches, clasping onto the post for dear life. His bruised shoulder quivered with pain, cranky as a rusty winch, but he held on and slowly hauled himself up, wishing he'd done more chin-ups in his life. He wheezed, squealed. His boots scrabbled against the door. He snaked an arm between 2 posts above and swung his left leg, wincing at the Charlie horse still in his thigh. Taking a quick breath, he opted for his right leg, feeling it drag against the door below.
"Fuck!"
Gus gasped, spittle spurting from his lips. Leave it to him to do it the hard way. Panic gave him precious strength, and he pulled his head up to where he could rest his chin on the second level if there was room. But then he burned through whatever strength he had, straining, sucking down huge gulps of air while gravity dug in and pulled him back down. A set of hands latched onto his forearms. Shock dropped Gus's mouth wide open.
"Fucking work, will ya?"
Talbert grated, covered in body armor and grimacing as he struggled to pull Gus up. He grabbed the Nomex by the loose folds covering Gus's thigh and flipped him over the railing like a heavy sack of fertilizer. Both men collapsed on the walkway, staring at each other.
"Where the fuck you come from?"
a dazed Gus puffed at the missing man.
"The fuck you come from?"
Talbert shot back, stooping low behind the railing.
"The fuck you mean you? Adam sent me to look for your missing ass."
"Yeah, well, you took your goddamn time."
"I just fucking got here.
I heard you come in a couple of fucking hours ago. The fuck you doing down there, making a sandwich? Touring the goddamn grounds?"
"Hey, dick smack. There's a fucking army of shitbags down there, in case you haven't noticed, and a snow-white bitch shooting arrows into my fireproofed ass."
"Yeah, I know all about that after birth," Talbert said, becoming serious. He wore no helmet. The black plates and scales of his armor looked intact, but the creepy part in his hair had been tussled.
"You know him?" Gus barked.
"Jesus Christ, I've been holed up here for fucking half a week. Of course I know about him."
Something puzzled Gus. "Where's the rest of your knob gobblers?"
"Hey, they're assholes to you. They're dead."
That one word took the wind out of Gus.
Talbert shook his head and was about to speak when he looked to the first floor. His eyes narrowed.
"Holy fucking shit."
The Korean mask archer stepped through the door beneath, bow held at the ready.
"It's him."
"Who's him?"
Gus wanted to know, pressing himself against the wall.
"Fucking Donald."
The sudden mundaneness of the name befuddled Gus's bullet train of thought.
"Who?"
"Gus, shut that shit trap you call a mouth for a second, will ya?" The archer sidestepped toward the fireplace on the living room's far side, grinning mask upturned in their direction, studying them merrily. He retrieved a fistful of arrows from his back, knocking one and managing the others between his fingers of his string hand.
"Well, shit," Talbert grated. "You better be able to run."
"Yeah, why?"
"Good. 'Cause he's gonna machine gun us, and I'm not fucking carrying your saggy ass."
"What?
Come on."
Talbert bolted for the far end of the carpeted walkway toward a doorway. Gus froze for a second before rising and following, running, sneaking quick peeks at the ghostly figure of Donald below. The archer wasn't moving at all, but he was aiming. Then the arrows flew. A section of the railing splintered from the impact of the first barbed head. Another arrow ricocheted off Gus's helmet, bouncing him off the wall. He crashed to the floor. A third snake sizzled between two posts and struck him like a pickaxe.
"Come on!" Talbert yelled at him.
Gus pulled himself up, feeling like a fly ripping its own wings off, and staggered forward to the doorway, where a crouched Talbert waved him home.
"Run, you chicken shit! Run! Everything you got! Come on!"
Three more arrows sizzled through the railing, pummeling Gus's frame and hindering him like a wounded elephant. The shafts bounced off and hit the wall, raining onto the carpet. Bent over on hands and feet with his ass up, Gus staggered to the door. The last foot, Taggart reached out and grabbed him by the shoulders, hauling him out of harm's way. Gus fell onto a queen-sized bed while Talbert slammed the door behind and propped a chair up under the knob. Gus groaned, feeling as if he'd just been pulled out from under a stampede. Every movement hurt.
"All right," Talbert said. "If that cocksucker decides to climb up after your ass, he's got to come through that door, and if he does, I'll split his fucking head open and giggle all the while."
Gus saw Talbert brandish Matt Miller's machete. The bedroom, rustic, with ergonomically matching furniture and eye-pleasant earth colors, spun for a second.
"You okay?"
The question coming from Talbert surprised him, but his helmet hid it.
"I feel like corn kernels in a flattened piece of shit."
Talbert chuckled darkly.
"You're a poet, bro."
Gus let that one go, seeing how the dickhead had saved his ass and all.
That coat, Talbert nodded, indicating Gus's. Must be puncture-proof. Same shit as Kevlar vests.
Yeah? So why do parts of me feel like I've been run over by a truck?
Said it was puncture-proof. The arrows probably still leave a bruise or two.
Great.
Gus's head fell between his shoulders. All right, Talbert went on. You just lie there for a bit and listen, okay? I'll fill you in on what happened these last couple of days.
We safe here?
Yeah, we're safe. They don't let the zombies onto the second floor.
Huh? Talbert smiled, a crooked ribbon of snow.
You heard me right. Congrats, you made it out of the arena in one piece. Minus your balls, of course. Not like you had a set anyway.
At that crack, Gus pulled his annoyed self to a sitting position.
All right, listen to this, Talbert cautioned. You'll need to know.
And he started talking.
Talbert and his lads had pulled up in front of the mansion, wide-eyed, weaponized, and eager to explore. The front door was wide open, and not a gimp in sight, so they immediately went to work going through rooms. The place was just as they imagined, luxurious to the point of near disbelief. Almost right away, they picked up a few killer-slick military-grade weapons straight out of a sci-fi movie, sick instruments of wrath none of them had ever seen before. Plenty of guns, but no ammunition. In the end, they left the arms where they'd found them.
That is a problem, Gus stated.
You gonna listen?
Go on.
Talbert scratched at his head and continued. After he and his boys had gone back out into the main hall, the door was closed. Worse, a steel plate had slid across and finalized their trapped asses. They were actually working on digging through the wood and seeing if some rewiring might open that bunker-sized slab of steel when the gimps attacked in force. A whole township, it seemed.
And the lights were on? Gus interrupted.
The lights were on, but it gets better. They fought a running battle through cathedral-like halls and were holding their own when voices started coming out of speakers built into the walls. Giggling voices. Also, the halls had tiny cameras fixed in nooks and crannies, little black snow domes turned bottom up and stuck to the ceiling, watching every move. Talbert and his men stuck to the side rooms, running through doorways, securing the ones with locks. They managed to evade the zombies in the beginning, until they turned a few corners and wound up on an indoor bowling alley. Busloads of dead men, women, and children trailed after them, pinning them in the alley, which had no windows and no other door besides the one they came through. A door that had mysteriously unlocked itself after Talbert himself had locked it. That's what's up with this place, he said. About half the rooms on the bottom floor are safe. They can be locked. The others got dick all, and some can be locked and unlocked remotely. You have to pay attention where you are.
Talbert cleared his throat before continuing.
They fought through the mass of zombies. Matt the Machete Miller was in his element, hacking and cutting like an electrified dervish. Benny swung his hammer, while Talbert and Sheldon used their bats, and after a while they actually thinned out the dead, enough to leave the alley. Back in the hall, however, Donald introduced himself from the third floor by sinking one of his arrows into the back of Sheldon's neck. The memory of the attack left Talbert speechless for a moment, and Gus didn't press him. Talbert started again, recounting how they tried to get upstairs to Donald. The voice on the speaker system started speaking. They were trespassers, the voice said, and as such had no rights to anything except a slow death. Sheldon had died slowly, painfully, kicking and twitching in his own blood. The point of the arrow had cut through his Adam's apple, and no doctor was needed to tell he was a goner. Sheldon slipped and staggered about like a wounded buck, the others too damn stunned to do anything, listening to that horrible rasping of air being forced through bleeding airways. Sheldon actually started clawing at his throat in the end, and that was the last image before the lights flickered off. Benny and Matt started freaking out while Talbert gave up trying to compose them and flailed his way through the dark as a fresh wave of undead piled into the corridors.
Though he couldn't see it behind him in that suddenly suffocating darkness, he heard Matt Miller swinging his machete and calling out for his companions. Talbert heard the harsh connections of the machete, heard Miller straining against that black pitch tide of limbs and mouths, heard the curses become shrieks, then muffled gargling, before that horrible, nerve-slicing sound of feeding filled the hallway. Talbert wanted to help him, but that writhing midnight soup of limbs and mouths stopped him cold. His own panicked screams drowned out the dying Miller.
Matt went down swinging. Give him that. Right in the center of a mob. Didn't know what happened to Benny until a day later. Sheldon bled out. At least I hope he bled out. Matt cut up more than a dozen of the things. I found the heads the next morning. And this, Talbert held up the machete, right in the middle. No Matt, though. No Benny, either.
Lights were still off, but there was some lit farther in the house, not that I was in any mood to explore then,
so I barricaded myself in a neat little bathroom I'd managed to crawl into the day before. Plenty of running water, raised sinks, tub with a TV screen, and even a silver minibar. Empty, though, but I mean, Christ. Best thing? The toilet flushed. I mean, the place was nicer than my fucking bedroom. I stayed in that shitter for a day and a half until I saw the light shining in from under the door. It stayed on, and a couple hours later, after I couldn't hear anyone out there, I stepped out.
Stepping out into that dreadful quiet, catching a whiff of air ripe with offal and viscera, and seeing what was left of a buddy left Talbert shaken. A zombie had wrenched his bat away, so he used the machete and went from room to room, deeper into the house, retreating into bathrooms upon seeing any walking corpses and hiding out like a mouse in the walls. Sometimes he had to fight, and he killed them straight out. The lights always went off just as a pack of zombies came into sight, and Talbert quickly learned that whoever was being cheap with the power was playing a game. Light to lure him out of hiding, dark just before the gimps tried to eat him. Sometimes Donald stalked about with his bow. In a short time, Talbert learned where the rotundas were and sections where a person could stand on the second and third floors and gaze down into the first. His armor had saved his ass from Donald's arrows three times already.
Donald usually stayed up here, and I couldn't find a way up. The staircases were all shut off. Only reason I got up to the second floor was by getting a fancy cord cut from a length of curtain, tying it off around the hilt of the machete, and spearing that through the posts of the railing and hauling my ass up and over. Only way. Up here, there's pretty much nothing. And the stairways to the third level are boarded up as well. Tried going through one of them barricades, but the racket brought the dead on my ass, and in the end I couldn't break through, not with what I have. Tried to find another way out, but...
Talbert shrugged.
We can't get out, Gus clarified. I haven't found it. This place is rat-proof, bro. We're safe up here, but for how long, I don't know. And...
he trailed off, smiling weakly.
I don't think I've ever been more hungry in all my life. You didn't happen to bring anything to eat, did you?
For all his dislike of the man, Gus felt a moment's pity when he shook his head and saw the hope drain from Talbert's features.
Sorry, Gus said. Wasn't prepped for this. Didn't even think there'd be any gimps still walking by this point.
Must be the floors or something.
Not as rough as scuffing along pavement.
Maybe. Searched the kitchen and pantry down below. Nothing. The cupboards were bare.
And we can't get up to the third?
Not yet. Maybe with you here we can figure something out.
Gus nodded.
Maybe. Don't know how much good I'll be to you. I'm pretty much spent. Must be the tension or something, burning up calories. I surprised myself when I pulled your ass up from below.
Who's doing the screaming?
Talbert cocked an eye at him.
Below?
Hate to say it. I think it's Benny.
Benny?
Donald caught him or something. Didn't let the gimps have him. Anyway, I think it's Benny. Been listening to that for the last day or so. D deeper in the house, in a part I'm staying away from because they seem to migrate there when the screaming starts. It's like, you know how hunters will use duck and deer calls to lure critters in?
Yeah, I think that's Benny.
Think Donald's keeping him alive long enough to use him as a fucking morbid duck call.
To draw the gimps away from the door?
Talbert nodded. And to sucker us into going after Benny.
That straightened Gus up on the bed.
Jesus. Yeah, it's like that.
Benny wasn't one of Gus's favorite people simply from association with Talbert, but knowing the man might be being used as bait soured his sensibilities.
So then, Talbert said, you're all caught up. We're stuck here until we can figure a way out, or we both starve. Wouldn't hold out on the starving, though. Donald knows we're up here, so I expect he'll be along shortly.
Then it's two against one.
Maybe, Talbert acknowledged, but his expression wasn't so confident.
You don't seem so sure.
Well, he said after a bit, thing is,
I trust you gentlemen are resting up.
A gravelly voice inquired eerily through the walls, causing both Gus and Talbert to jump as if icy hands had cupped their testicles. Chapter 7. The disembodied voice paused for a moment, allowing Gus and Talbert to creep to the main door of the bedroom.
Step out into the hallway where I can see you, the voice continued, with crisp, cultured enunciation.
The speaker volume lessened.
Fuck that, Gus muttered.
Talbert nodded agreement.
I applaud your resilience, gentlemen. Most succumb to the zombies of the house. Otherwise, Donald cleans up. One of you, the one wearing the military-grade armor, has actually broken the record for longest period of survival on the first floor. That's quite an achievement, considering the history. You've been duly noted in my journal. An honorable mention, if you will.
Gus cracked open the door to the dimmed hallway and scanned the ceiling, feeling the moody oppression of the place.
Who are you? He yelled.
Ah, the voice sighed. I'm the owner. Mortimer?
Ah, you know of me.
Heard a few stories.
Though the voice sounded clearer, Gus couldn't locate a camera.
Are you from Digby?
Annapolis.
I see. I actually visited that small city once, unannounced, incognito. One benefit of electing a recluse's existence, the common folk fail to recognize you upon making appearances. Annapolis, what a miserable, self-indulgent mash of second-tier industry and misplaced elitism, sprouting from soil drenched in weekend alcoholic binging, academic malaise, and an eroding military presence. An unlikely economic synergy that refused to perish. Astonishing, really. Even more so when all those quaint little towns amalgamated. Town pride and all that.
Talbert's what-the-fuck expression said it all.
Well, in any case, gentlemen, you forced me to play my hand.
Why? Gus demanded, scanning the hallway.
What do you mean, why?
Why are you doing this?
Why? The voice repeated, incredulous. Why not? In the absence of a police body, one must defend one's property. To be perfectly blunt, you're trespassing, and neither you nor your surviving companion have been the first to violate my home. If being besieged by the undead wasn't deplorable enough, you can't possibly imagine how displeased I felt to discover that the remnants of humanity had, in effect, taken some self-deluded high moral ground and believed anything was up for the taking. Especially a self-contained, self-sufficient dwelling such as my manor and the lands surrounding it.
This piece of honeyed real estate drew clouds of human flies who weren't at all responsive to my attempts of dissuasion. In fact, like petulant children, they couldn't fathom why I refused them entry into my domicile. Can you believe it? I never associated with any of them during the preceding lethargic juncture reached by civilization, so what would propel me to do so in the apocalypse at the very height of barbarism, humanity? Oh, they pleaded that point until it bled. And when I still refused, well, the subsequent acts of vandalism and violence only confirmed my suspicions of their uncivil and barbarous nature. Their myopic crabbiness served only to strengthen my resolve to forever distance myself from the surviving, warring populace. There was one problem, however. More and more of these desperate refugees, armed to the teeth in some cases, became the law unto themselves. Self-proclaimed pillars of the community, braying righteousness, willing to do whatever was necessary to protect their children, courteous one moment, infuriated and frothing at the jowls the very next. Every group that stopped on my doorstep seemed more willing than the last to resort to violence in order to gain entry into the kingdom. It actually started to amuse me to see how a simple refusal could not be processed, how a blunt, "Go away, let slip the dogs of war." Scenes I never thought probable manifested themselves right on my very doorstep, all because I had and they didn't. Thus they would take, and take by force. Humanity. The word bubbled with loathing. In the first year of the apocalypse, sheer spectacles of depravity and violence played themselves out on my doorstep. People had reverted to their baser instincts, their covetous nature. Entirely id, you see, labeled by the rather ambiguous term of survival. I eventually recognized that the solution to dissuading these packs of roving Huns was right before my eyes. At the abrupt space of silence, neither Gus nor Talbert had the capacity to say a word. "The dead, you see," Mortimer purred. "For is not the enemy of my enemy my friend?" Dealing with the dead was far more preferable and, dare I say, palatable to denying the living. The remnants of the Digby populace only had to be persuaded to relocate to the estate, an undertaking my employees took upon themselves. "Employees," Gus mouthed to Talbert, who made an incredulous face and shrugged. "Trusted men and women with years of service," Mortimer continued. "Of course I allowed their families to exist underneath my roof. But these raiding, unaccepting, ill-tempered fuckers waged war on my people. Just couldn't take no for an answer. In the absence of a cohesive body of law and order, they reverted to their base urges. Cursed us, cursed me, when they forced me to dire measures, whereupon I summoned a festering and famished flood of undead to cleanse my property of the hateful living. And that was only the first year. A year, you must understand. To witness firsthand how quickly civil order dissolved was more horrifying than anything you might have witnessed or experienced in your years out there among the living. In time, after modifications to the house had been completed, I permitted my defenders entry inside my walls, provided them with shelter under my roof. It's been an admirable, dare I say, mutually beneficial relationship, you see. They protect us, and we provide them with sustenance." On that cue, a pitiful scream drifted from deep within the haunted corridors. "Over the years, fewer people came here," the voice continued. but their proclivity for violence increased. Monstrous battles were fought inside these walls as it became apparent the best solution to dealing with any scavenger coveting the proper was simply to open the front door. Allow them to waltz inside and be dealt with in a manner you've already experienced firsthand.
"Just let us go," Gus pleaded. "We won't come back."
Talbert's back noticeably stiffened at the words. The voice cut in.
"Heard that one before. You must realize I've heard every promise there is, when in truth, the only one ever kept has been my own. I was never this cold-hearted, please understand. In the beginning, some parties left the grounds, but they returned, almost always in force, sometimes under different leadership, seeking to enter these premises with deadly force. How often must I grant leniency until I recognize the futility, before I'm perceived as a gullible fool? The answer? Not often at all. Human nature isn't that unpredictable under duress. No, I am what I am because those who've come before you made me this way. The gnashing of teeth around that word was unmistakable.
What about Donald, then?
What about him? What's up with the hunting gear?
Ah, a smile accompanied the sound.
After the harvests and during the winters, the creature comforts here that we so fervently protect are all that we have, you see. Boredom will find you eventually, and sink its dreary fangs deep into your throat. What my boys do to amuse themselves is entirely up to them. One paints well enough to bamboozle our captive guests, much to our mutual amusement. Otherwise, I have no influence on their impulses, as they have none upon mine.
Donald ascertained, rather correctly, I might add, that stragglers such as yourselves could survive quite a while upon the first floor, even dangerously exhausting our supply of corpses. Thus he took it upon himself to root out any of the more stubborn guests. In time, how he did this duty evolved, as you've already seen, to a more sporting event. Simply put, the boy's just having fun.
That's fucked up, Gus whispered. My sentiments exactly, Mortimer agreed eagerly. But I must insist, my staff and I are not the villains in this story. We never were. We are the defenders of our castle, whereas you and the ilk before you are the invaders. Usually our uninvited guests perish upon the hunting grounds of the first floor. Can you imagine my dismay at discovering rats